Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray at rte.ie. It was a weekend of two halves where we were. Saturday was terrible. Sunday had a bit of sunshine. The good news is that next weekend, which is a long weekend, the May weekend, is going to be good, according to the man or the lady, can't remember, on the weather forecast this morning. So that's good news, something to look forward to. And looking back to last Friday, we had a bit of weather when we were up in Laytown, and thanks to everybody again up in Laytown, County Meath. We had such a brilliant time there. Siobhan and Nicola for inviting us up in the first place. And the Laytown Wave Warriors and Bettystown Swim Tribe, the groups. We spoke to lovely people, loads of them. We played some of them out, and we didn't get to play out Agnes. Lovely Agnes and Polly and Tanya. And then, of course, we have a special mention for Nuala, who's 92, or could be 93, still working in a Riley supermarket up in Laytown. And everyone who came along to the promenade, very posh to say hello. It's really whetted our appetite to get out and about in our little van and do some more of those OBs, those outside broadcasts. So if you have any suggestions where you'd like to see the roadcaster go next, where should we park up? Get them into us, ray@rte.ie. And we'll give your town or village or wherever the Laytown treatment. There was something just very special about it. You know, when everything is aligned, all the stars are aligned and the people are aligned, and it just, it was lovely. It was lovely. Hopefully it sounded lovely as well. We got into the sea and we held hands and we shouted and we laughed and giggled, and it was just a lovely day, lovely day. Email busy over weekend. Isabel Whelan was on. She said, just attaching a bit of video of the one-legged bird in Tesco in Maynooth. My brother took it the other day. He hadn't been listening to your show, but our mother had, and told him about the bird, and he told her he had only taken video of it. So look, it's true. Yes, it is. It's the one. I was poo-pooing the one-legged bird, because we got an email in from Anne in Leixlip last week, and says, talking of swallows being back, I was in Tesco Maynooth and they have a resident swallow there. The girl at the till told me he comes back every year. We know, because he only has one leg, so a bird can fly on one leg. They just ignore him as he wanders about the tills. Great to see, says Anne in Leixlip. But I said, yeah, go on, that sounds like an urban legend. But Isabel sent us in video evidence, and if it's in a video, it must be true. Or is it? Oh yeah. We all saw the Pope and his big puffer. That wasn't true. That was the creation of ChatGPT, which we'll be talking about today. Now, if you were sort of listening very carefully, you would have heard the promo, and you probably would have said, that sounds a bit odd. If you didn't hear it, here it is again.
The Ray Darcy Show, weekdays from 3 on RTE Radio 1.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, we talk to Professor Gregory Proven from University College Cork about why we should have a conversation about ChatGPT and how it and its ilk are likely to change the world we live in. And Conor Pope will be on hand to deal with all your consumer problems. You can contact Conor and us on ray@ratey.ie. We will talk to you after Live.
So it's a website that uses some sort of AI, and I uploaded a bit of my voice, and then I typed in the script for today's promo, and that's what I got. Now, it's far from perfect, but it's for free and it's early days. So you can imagine what will be done in years to come. And we're going to be talking to Professor Gregory Proven from UCC about AI. And I know we've been sort of talking about it in a sort of a nice, light, funny sort of way, but there are serious implications for all of us, indeed for mankind, if we don't introduce laws and regulations surrounding AI and its development. And we'll be talking to Gregory Proven about that. It's not just voice and pictures and video, it's all sorts of things. It's going to affect every part of our life, and we all need to know about it and inform ourselves about it. But don't go to ChatGPT to inform yourself about it. Listen to the radio. That version of me sounds a little bit more posh. And there's a little bit of Pat Kenny in there as well. And I put another thing in as well. So you just upload a bit of your own voice and then type in script.
Oh yeah, this a test of AI capability when it comes to cloning voices. Because I'm from the Midlands, I sometimes have problems with my these WEE. For example, this, that those and these can sound like this, dat, dos and these. Thanks, CEO, wouldn't want to be A.
Yeah, I know, lost in translation, but it's a bit of fun. But the whole thing is quite serious, and we'll be talking to Gregory Proven from UCC about that. If you have any questions, because I think the majority of people don't understand what's going on. And oftentimes when we don't understand something, we just go, that's not for me. But we really need to understand it and inform ourselves so we have an opinion. So that was the one-legged bird. And Mohammed has been on to us. He says, I know this is insignificant in the scale of things, but as the population in Ireland is becoming more diverse, it would make people feel more welcome if the public service could be more open to those of us from different cultures, says Mohammed. One simple way would be the provision of a prayer room, non-denominational, at public buildings such as driving test centres, council offices and train stations. Hospitals and healthcare settings have them. Why not other public areas? The prayer room would not be just for people from the Abrahamic faiths, but could be used by others such as those from Druidic faiths, especially at solstice times. Regards, Mohammed. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Prayer rooms in public buildings, they exist already in hospitals and healthcare settings, and Mohammed is calling for them to be included in public buildings like test centres, driving test centres, council offices and train stations. You might remember back in March we spoke to Amy, Sean and Alison. They were about to take part in a skydive to raise money for the Irish Heart Foundation. It was all in memory of their lovely granddad, Larry. We did a lovely chat about granddad Larry. Larry had suffered from heart disease throughout his life. And when we spoke to his grandchildren, they shared lovely memories, as I say. He had never let his declining health stop him. Even at 80, he had a bucket list of adventures that he wanted to go on. They were determined to carry on the adventures, even after his passing. And that's why they decided to do a skydive. And they did it over the weekend down in Clumbalogue in County Offaly. Thanks so much for having us on again. They say we completed our skydive last Saturday. We now have raised 8,000 for the Irish Heart Foundation. And their fundraising is ongoing. So well done. Well done, everybody there. And they sent us photographic evidence, if it is actually them, or maybe they generated using AI. See, I won't believe anything now. Unless somebody's standing in front of me and I can touch them and smell them, I won't believe, because people can copy your voice, they can copy your image, they can do all sorts of things. Anyway, tonight, I'm a Celebrity's back. South Africa. I don't know the background to this. Somebody might fill me in. It's pre-recorded, they're telling me. And it has some former winners and participants. So Paul Burrell, Prince Diana's former butler's there, Helen Flanagan, Carol Vorderman, they're all there. And of course, Anton Dekker there as well. So they're really milking that. Well, I suppose they have to get their £23 million sterling worth out of Anton Deck. Which brings us nicely on to what the team are watching over the weekend. We've been doing this for the last few weeks. So rather than do it before the weekend starts, while it's fresh in our memories, we tell you what we watched over the weekend, and you might find something in this little pile of streaming services and terrestrial TV that might suit you. Niamh watched the last and very sentimental episode of Star Trek Picard that was on Amazon Prime. A perfect ending to the show by all accounts, but in her house all roads led to Kin on Sunday night. RT1 After News, it's been a slow burner the whole series, she says, but keeps getting better and better as they build to what's shaping up to some major drama. It's like watching a mini movie every Sunday night. That's our Niamh. Gilly has started watching The Morning Show on Apple. It's been out a long time, we know. That's the way people watch stuff now. They're coming to it late. I really enjoyed The Morning Show, as did Gilly, starring Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon as anchors on a morning show in America. Steve Carell used to be an anchor, but he was a bold boy. Billy Crudup seems to have a constant smile on his face. He's one of the executives. It's very interesting, very entertaining. That's what Gilly's watching on Apple. Emily P was away at the weekend, so didn't get to watch any TV. However, if you're a nervous flyer like she is, she recommends heading over to the calming side of the streaming platforms. For example, Netflix have Fireplace for Your Home, a whole hour of crackling fire. The sounds alone are comforting. Disney, you can have a Finding Nemo underwater series. You can watch hours of relaxing coral reef footage and fish swimming by. Great for calming your toddlers or adults who hate turbulence when flying. It's interesting because, did I tell you that? When I go to the dentist, they have a telly attached to the ceiling and they have underwater scapes. You know, fish, just coral reef and all that. So if you're nervous about the dentist, you can watch that. It's sort of distraction, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah. Neil started watching Florida Man on Netflix. Not far enough into it to endorse it or not, but he's intrigued. It's billed as a disgraced cop in debt, is forced to return to his home state of Florida for a shady mission, only to get swept up in a wild and deadly treasure hunt. There you go. Emily H. started watching Succession from the start, series one. And if you're a fan, you're probably jealous of her, that she has all of that delectable TV to watch all four seasons. I watched the end of Beef, which is brilliant, and Babylon. We haven't got past B in our house. Babylon, I loved it. Not for everyone. It's not for, definitely not for the faint-hearted. Directed by Damien Chazelle, who did La La Land and Whiplash and other things. It stars Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie, and it's about the dying days of the silent movies in Hollywood. It's real Sodom and Gomorrah stuff, but... 3 hours long. It's brilliant. It's exciting, and it's a sort of a treat for the senses. I loved it, but as I say, not for everybody. Babylon. It's available on Apple. So there's our recommendations from the weekend. 5 on 5 on RayRT.ie. And just before we go to music, the Journal are doing a poll at the moment about. Cherry blossoms, yes, they're out in full bloom, and they're delicious, and they're lovely, and they're beautiful, and they just bring a smile to your face. We have a big one outside the offices here in the radio centre, and it's just, you might be feeling bad, and you come in, and it's dark, and you notice the odd stain on the carpet, well, more than the odd stain on the carpet, and then you look out the window, and there it is in all its glory, this beautiful cherry blossom. Anyway, the Journal has a poll on cherry blossoms today. Yeah, I know. So they're asking people, these are the three things you can respond to. Cherry blossoms make me feel happy. I feel nothing when I see cherry blossoms. Cherry blossoms are a source of frustration in my life. Anyway, the majority of people say cherry blossoms make me feel happy. Yay, I'm one of those. 4,215. I feel nothing when I see cherry blossoms. 225. Now, they probably don't feel anything, or maybe they're just been cantankerous. Anyway, and then 178 people say cherry blossoms are a source of frustration in my life. And maybe it's the petals, and maybe they have to clean them up. You know what I mean? That could be that 170. You don't know what's going on in people's lives. How do cherry blossoms make you feel? Let us know, or maybe not. 5 on 5 on Ray at RTE. This is the compromise version. It's the live version. John Spillane, the RTE Concert Orchestra from the Cork Opera House. Good afternoon.
Let me tell you about the cherry trees.
Fair play to you. Well done, John Spillane. And the dance of the cherry trees.
Live.
I think they'd like that, the cherry trees. They'd be dancing around to that. News just in. Yes, news just, this is very important news. U2 have announced their Vegas dates. Yes, there was a big hoo-ha about this. They're starting a residency. They're going to launch the world's most cutting-edge venue called Sphere at the Venetian, is it, in Las Vegas. The first one is Friday, 29th September. Then the next night, Saturday 30th, Thursday, October 5th, Saturday, October 7th, Sunday, October 8th. And I see that paid subscribers to U2.com have first dibs on the tickets. And then they're open, I think, for everybody else on Wednesday at 7 a.m. if you want to get tickets to see U2 in Vegas. Bono in Vegas is sort of right, isn't it? It just works, doesn't it? Yeah. He'll relish that. He'll be energised by it. Come on! Walk away, walk away. Thank you. You too. Alec has been on from Limerick to Ray at RTE.ie. Have you time for this? Yes, I do. On Friday afternoon, I was at the Rock Shop in Liscannor. I saw a family getting into a car. I was taking a photograph for a photo rally, so I wasn't taking much notice. The family drove away, but only afterwards did I see a toy sheep on the ground, photo attached. It's a white sheep with a black face, and it's wearing a pink bib with a green shamrock on it. It has pink fleecy feet. It was a silver D-Reg car. I was on a motorbike, so I took off after the car in the direction it went. Couldn't find them. They might be listening to your show. I can post it or they can collect it. I'm sure there will be a broken-hearted child somewhere, Alec in Limerick. You're very good, Alec, getting on to us about that. It's a happy looking sheep. It looks like one of Sean the sheep's friends. So it was Friday afternoon. A car with a D-Reg leaving the rock shop in Liscannor. We haven't done something like this in a long time. It'd be great to get a result on this, wouldn't it? And it's a little sheep, white with a black face, and it has a green shamrock on a pink fleece around its neck, one of those bandana type things, and then pink fleecy feet. So any leads there, any clues or any information to the Gardaí, any information to 51551 or ray@rte.ie. We'd love to reunite the little sheep with the people in the silver D-Reg car. And thanks to Alec for that. Thank you, Alec. For what it's worth, I'm watching Mindhunter on Netflix. Now, I'm not of the streaming generation. I'm around your age. But Mother of God, what a deeply disturbing experience before bed. And I live alone. Peter Fitzgibbon. Peter, why do you invite that into your life? You know how it's going to affect you. You know you have to go to sleep. You know, add the whole thing up and say, no, maybe that's not for me. If I have an afternoon, I'll watch Mindhunter. But not before bed. Will you give us another chance to hear that lady from Laytown singing again? Thank you, Paul. Niamh Regan, beautiful voice. And again, so privileged because we were in the Roadcaster, tiny little studio in the Roadcaster. And we had Nuala and we had Justine Stafford and myself. And then Niamh was behind them. This is for the opener. And then I wasn't there for Niamh's rehearsals because I was off in the Irish Sea jumping around and giggling. And then she started singing and I was transfixed. And it was just a privilege to be in her company. Niamh Regan, I think Hemet is the name of her album, H-E-M-E-T, which is a place in America where she recorded most of the album. Stuck in traffic, I observed a child standing under a cherry tree shedding its leaves. Looked like snow. She was loving it. Noel, I have a lovely picture of our Kate when she's about six, and it must have been dry back then because all the petals are on the footpath, but they're still, you know, they're not sort of walked into the ground, and she's there and she lifts them up and throws them up. And she's in a shower of petals. Some of my best work, actually, when it comes to photography, was that one. But yeah, loads of photo opportunities with cherry blossoms. Good afternoon from Malta. Hello, Malta. Can we have your... I planted a cherry blossom tree in my garden in Connemara last March in memory of my lifelong precious friend, Mo Dowling, on the first anniversary of her passing. Lovely thing to do. When she was young, she was known as Blossom. Her sister's friends and sons joined me. A very special day and lady, kind regards, Sue. That's a lovely thing to do, Sue. So there is Mo remembered in your garden every year with the lovely cherry blossom tree. That's nice. OK, we're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Yeah, two quizzers, three Who Done It questions on music, sport, books, politics, inventions, anything that involves human endeavour. Like all Who Done It, there will be clues. If you go without a clue, you get two. If you go with a clue, it's easier. You get 1 point for a correct answer. And there's a prize to celebrate the launch of the River Club Sanctuary Terrace. The River Lee in Cork is giving one lucky listener the chance to win a two-night getaway with cocktails on the stunning terrace. You get a room as well. Located in the heart of Cork City, the terrace at the River Club has been transformed into a haven of tranquility just in time for the warmer months. The perfect place to enjoy an evening tipple or a weekend brunch with friends. Sanctuary at the River Club is inspired by city parks and Georgian squares and is covered in beautiful clusters of wisteria, ivy and other scented blossoms. A gorgeous place to relax overlooking the River Lee. I want to be there. Doylecollection.com/Cork. Doylecollection.com/Cork. The River Lee Hotel. Okay, so that's what's on offer today. Here's your qualifying question. Which social media site took away and then gave back some blue ticks this weekend? Which social media site took away and then gave back some blue ticks this weekend? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I watched a video this morning, a talk by two lads. From the Centre for Humane Technology. And I was a little bit scared at what I saw. For example, not a lot of people know this, but using the Wi-Fi signals in your office, it is now possible to map the location of everybody in the office without a camera. Think about that. So they just take all the Wi-Fi signals, put it into a computer, use AI, and they can map where you are sitting. And they can even see your posture, whether you're standing, leaning over your desk, jumping up and down or whatever. That's just one of the scary things that AI can do. And we've been talking about it over the last while in a sort of a light way. We've been talking about AI and chat, GPT. And there was an article in the Irish Times that caught our eye last week. The headline read, Chat GPT poses an existential threat and the window for gaining control over it is small. The author was Gregory Proven. Gregory is Professor of Computer Science and Information Technology at University College Cork. And he has come into our Cork studio to have a chat. How are you doing, Gregory?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Ray. Thank you very much for bringing me on to the show.
Yeah, and thanks for coming in. Now, people are probably wondering why all the talk so suddenly. Because AI was the thing of sci-fi movies 10, 15 years ago. And then there was a little bit of chat about it. But over the last while, you can't open up a paper without seeing an article about the capabilities of AI. So what has happened?
I would say that there is a phase change that is going on, and we really have to understand what that phase change is all about and what it can mean for each of our lives. So let me give two examples of previous phase changes. So one is the Google search engine. So everybody uses Google today, and what this search engine allowed us to do is gain access to all of the information on the web. Now, one of the interesting things about this search engine is that it has safety built into the algorithm. And this is because it weights the sources on the web. So if a lot of people are citing a particular source, it'll get a high weight. And if very few people, if Joe Madman has very few pointers on the web, then he's going to get very low weight. Uh-huh. And Google will then return your search results based on the weight it assigns. So that is the built-in safety mechanism, so that if everybody is citing a particular source, then it's more likely that that source is credible. So then the next phase change, in my view, would be the advent of social media. And pretty much everybody is on social media today. And, you know, Facebook has become very popular. And the problem is that Facebook doesn't have any safety built into it. And, you know, as a consequence, we've seen that there's been a lot of negative press about several aspects of these things. And, you know, for example, young girls have known to be suffering with Instagram. And, you know, there was a congressional hearing in the U.S. about this. And, you know, the interesting thing to me is that there hasn't been, you know, a huge kickback on this or as significant a kickback. So ChatGPT now is amping that up by at least one level of magnitude. And, you know, there is no safety built into this. And so we really have to pay attention.
Okay. I'm looking at the statistics. So this time, like when it came out first, there were 10,000 users. Now there are over 100 million. So it's increased its usage in 2 months from 10,000 to 100 million. For people who haven't used it, Chat GPT, is it not just another form of Google?
It's significantly more than Google. Okay. So it enables you to have interactions where it goes beyond what data it's been built on. So Google, the Google search engine, it just returns to you information on the web.
Okay, right.
And now this is what's called generative AI. So you can give it a theme and it will expand on the theme. And because people don't really know how the technology works underneath the hood, you don't know how it's going to generate responses.
So we'll give people examples there. So a few weeks ago, for example, upstairs they asked ChatGPT to generate a poem about me, I think in the style of W.B. Yeats or something. And within seconds then, there was a 7 or 8 verse stanza poem using some of the details about me that I run and eat porridge and stuff like that. I included all those details into it. I've used AI this morning to replicate my voice. I can do that. There are loads of different things. So we'll come to voices later on because we've loads of things to talk about. And the thing, as you said, and the important word in there is that it's creating things. So it's creating things that haven't existed prior to your request.
Yes, and okay. You know, that's the power, both positive and negative. And you know, that people have talked about it as hallucinating. So you know, you can type in some queries, and it can generate stuff that is provably false and you're wondering where does it get this information from, if you were to talk to the OpenAI creators, they would say, well, we don't know.
Well, here's the thing. You've said it there, right? You said they don't know how it works. The OpenAI people who created it said they don't know how it works. I watched that talk with Tristan Harris and his mate, and they're very qualified people. They run the Center for Humane Technology. They don't know how it works. They were in a room of all the high-tech people out in Silicon Valley. None of those know how it works. How did this come about that we have this thing and nobody knows how it works?
The technology is based on an advance from 2017, and it's called Transformers. And basically, it allows you to generate language that provides context. So previous to this, if you said, I'm feeling blue today, or my car is blue, the AI wouldn't know how to interpret the word blue because it wouldn't have appropriate context.
Yes.
But now it uses a context and it can have these very subtle understanding of the language. And so as a consequence, it can approach human-level conversation. It can generate, as you've seen and you talked about, it can generate poems. And so now it can engage with humans in a way that has never been seen before. And, you know, the pros and the cons are enormous.
Right. So I suppose the pros are, for example, AI has been used in cancer treatment, diagnostic cancer treatment, and it works very effectively. So there are loads of pros. The cons, though, are very worrying. For example, now, if you're on Snapchat, and Snapchat is aimed now at or is appealing to sort of preteens and teens, younger teens, you can have your AI friend. And I saw, a stunt where this man pretended to be a 13-year-old, said he was meeting a 31-year-old man for sex. And the AI friend, which is put in there by Snapchat, didn't in any way give advice or intervene or didn't know how to. So they've no moral compass. This AI has no moral compass whatsoever. And it's where is it getting its information from? Like if I say to it, can I have a picture of a horse on the Curra painted in the style of Jack B. Yeats? And it delivers that. Where does it get that the basics from?
It trawls the internet and it pulls everything it can down. And as you're saying, it's exactly right. There is no moral training in here. And part of the question is, can morality be inferred from data? And look, you know, we have all kinds of good science on the web, but we have a lot of hate speech. We have all kinds of nonsense. And the AI is just pulling this data down and it doesn't know what is right, what is wrong. And so a question is, how can you infer that some data is believable versus being less believable?
Okay.
And one of the things that I think about is, you know, if you were to train it to be looking at the history of warfare, right? You know, we've seen warfare throughout our history. And a question might be, can the AI infer that war is okay from the fact that we've had continuous war? And where would you find information about war being immoral or just wars? I mean, these are questions. So, you know, you've cited the case where the AI talks about all kinds of dark aspects of life and it has no moral compass.
Which is worrying.
Yes.
The other thing is, and I still can't get over the fact that people don't know how it works. But what people do know is that it's feeding itself. So just by asking it a question, we are feeding it. And it's getting bigger and bigger. And now the people who have designed it, as in OpenAI, they are providing a transcription service, and which means that now all podcasts and all that stuff will be transcribed, which will give ChatGPT more information. It's creating things that don't exist. Okay, fine. But what about when it comes to, say, mathematics and science? Is it doing things that humans haven't done?
Not yet, but people are hoping that it will. And, you know, certainly in drug discovery, a lot of the drug companies are really pushing on this technology, hoping that they'll get a leg up in developing new drugs that we haven't been able to as yet.
Okay. So where is the existential threat then, Gregory?
Well, I could give an example from my own workplace. So Microsoft has rolled out ChatGPT technology across Microsoft Office. The Bing search engine uses ChatGPT. And so we now are using ChatGPT technology on a day-to-day basis because Microsoft is the basis of our IT structure. And we have not been informed about this by Microsoft. We haven't been given an opt-in or opt-out capability. And so we are unconsciously using ChatGPT. And that concerns me because we don't really know how it works. And if I were to contrast the current Google search engine, we know very well how that works. And as I said, we understand that there is safety built into that. If we use a ChatGPT-based search engine, we don't know the veracity of the results it would give us. And, you know, this is a very simple thing, but it is affecting us.
Okay. Microsoft is a huge multinational company with a long history in what it does. So it is now putting this ChatGPT, which is sort of like putting Google on your computer. Why would it do it if there was some sort of threat, existential threat involved?
I think it's all about making a profit. And, you know, they think that this is the way forward. This is the way that can give them a leg up on Google. I mean, the Google search engine is the dominant search engine, and they're hoping that this will provide them with greater leverage.
This will overtake Google.
That's what they're hoping. And, you know, Google is responding. So just at the end of last week, Google put in a major corporate restructuring, and they're thinking about replacing their search engine with a ChatGPT-based search engine.
Right. Over 50% of AI researchers questioned said that there's a 10% chance of AI taking over the world. Now, these are the people in the know. These are people who are at the cutting edge of AI. The future is now, and the plots of sci-fi movies from the past are scarily close, are they?
I would say absolutely yes. And, you know, we have an opportunity now to control what is being released into, you know, the wild.
How? You see, I suppose, like, I've been saying this for a long time. You know, we paid far too much respect to the big tech companies. We were sort of infatuated by, you know, Facebook creating community, let's have more friends, share pictures. And nobody asked the difficult questions back then. Are we going to make the same mistakes again?
It seems like we are. And, you know, I would urge the Irish government to really think through all of these things. And, you know, the window, I believe, is narrow.
Hmm. I think people don't understand how strong it is, how its capability. So, for example, I saw again in that talk, Tristan Harris, and I must get that man's name now, Eze somebody. So they showed how this AI technology can read neuro images. So this is what happened. They showed a person a picture of a giraffe, and they took a picture of what was going on in their brain, right? Then they fed the picture of what was going on in the brain into AI. And what did it deliver? A picture of a giraffe just there on. So that's sort of mind reading.
Absolutely. And you know, you said earlier, we are feeding this, but there is a notion that it is also feeding itself. So if you think back to maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the AI was playing games. So, you know, games like checkers or chess things like that. And the way they did it was that they created a search, and they would search through all of the plays that they would win, and they would try and force the game in that direction.
So, of course, because they were computers, they could do all of this in a very quick time.
Yes.
Yes.
But what happened, a revolution occurred where we had these learning agents, and you just set the learning agent playing against itself. So you had this game called Go, and people thought that AI could never solve the game of Go because it's so complicated. And it turns out that they just set this game of Go playing against itself continuously, and lo and behold, it now surpasses human expertise.
So it's like an expert hurler playing against themselves, and eventually with endless energy, and they just play against each other until they become the perfect hurler.
Yes, absolutely. So
right.
ChatGPT has this capability. So ChatGPT can not only take the data it has already, but it can simulate more data and it can continuously improve what's going on inside of it.
So say if I was a politician and I wanted to convince people to vote for me using AI, ChatGPT, I could feed that in to ChatGPT that they had to convince itself that voting for Republicans, for example, was the best thing to do. And they would have this very well rehearsed, infinitely rehearsed argument as to why you should vote for Republicans. And then they could unleash it on the world. Is that the way? Is that it?
That's part of it. But it's also feeding on social media. So, you know, one of the things with social media is that you have these very narrow tunnels. And, you know, that's part of the
echo chambers.
The echo chambers, yes. And so now these are going to be much more fine-tuned to be able to understand individual personalities. And they can better tune their arguments in these echo chambers. And, you know, the problem with polarization that we've seen, especially in the US, is just going to have the potential to become considerably worse.
Okay. Now, I'm fascinated by voice, and everybody will, I suppose, look at AI through their own lens. So I work using my voice. That's my career. So I'm fascinated by the fact that they can, AI can reconstruct voices. So, for example, this is Elon Musk. He never said these words, but this is an AI generation.
With play.ht, you can clone your own voice and have an identity.
He never said that. Dwayne Johnson never said this.
With play.ht, you can clone your own voice and have.
Tom Hanks definitely never said this.
The great thing about play.ht is that you can clone your own voice.
Kevin Hart would be far too expensive to do a voiceover.
The great thing about play.ht is that you can.
Barack Obama, unlikely.
With play.ht, you can clone your own voice and have an identical replica of it.
And of course, play.ht didn't exist when John F. Kennedy was alive.
With play.ht, you can clone your own voice and have an identical replica of it. Play leverages the latest generative media techniques to create the highest quality version of your voice.
Oh. So the problem there is, you know, if somebody records my voice, which is easy to do, but say somebody recorded my daughter's voice and then got her to say things that she never said and left a voice message saying, "Man, I'm stuck. Can you transfer, you know, a couple of hundred euro into this account number?" And we do it and we're scammed.
Yeah. So this is yet another higher order of scamming that is certainly within the current capability.
Yeah. And still, I'll just stay with voices for a moment, because they say that the people who know that social media was sort of a competition for our attention. They had to keep our eyes on screen as long as they could. They're saying that the next level is intimacy. So people will be preying on the lonely. And one of the things, of course, is, I don't know if you ever saw that movie Horror, where the man falls in love with the computer voice.
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson is the voice. So I got Jenny. First of all, I got Jenny is my wife, but also this lady who exists as a computer voice, just coincidentally. So I just typed in something for her to say.
This is a test of AI capability when it comes to cloning speech. Majuro is the capital of the Marshall Islands. Thanks. And good luck in the cup. See ya. Wouldn't want to be you.
Now, there you go. That's Jenny, right? Now, that's fine. That's all very innocent. And it's just, you know, we were doing it because we can. But then it gets a little bit more sinister when Jenny sounds like this.
Hello, Ray. I heard you were lonely. Would you like some company? I'm here for you, just to listen or for a chat.
See?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are chatbots in existence, replicas, one of them. And, you know, this includes all of that kind of role play as we speak.
And then images, because the latest filter from Instagram is amazing. And really, I could get a filter for, they could create a filter so I could become anybody. And then I could give myself somebody else's voice. So, you know, we are at a stage where we don't know what's real and what's not.
Yeah, and that's very frightening, very frightening.
And we saw back in 2016 when social media, as it was, and it looks sort of quaint now by comparison, was used to influence the results of the American presidential election. What's going to happen the next time round?
I mean, it's really hard to say. Cambridge Analytica was quite an eye-opener for many people. And, you know, the problem is we haven't done enough about these kinds of things.
Will you stay with us, Gregory? We have to take a quick commercial break and we have some texts and questions for you. Sure. And we'll get to those after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
ChatGPT poses an existential threat and the window for gaining control over it is small, says our guest Gregory Proven. Gregory is in our Cork studio. And I'll just remind people that the greatest minds in the world who work in this area are finding it difficult to get their heads around this. So if you're listening at home and your brain is a bit frazzled, you're not on your own. Now, let's see what they're saying. All this alarmist talk about AI reminds me of the hullabaloo over the Millennium Bug. Planes were going to fall from the sky, nuclear missiles would launch themselves, etc. The result, nothing happened. Zilch. It's just alarmist nonsense, says that person, Gregory.
I would disagree strongly with that. If you want to just look at the damage that social media has done, and that is a significantly less powerful capability, then that's the answer.
Yeah. There's that video I've been mentioning. It's called AI Dilemma. And it's brought to you by the people who brought you Social Dilemma, which was that brilliant documentary which sort of uncovered the harm that social media has done. And you would have thought that we would have learned from that, but it appears that we haven't. Ray, imagine matching AI with a suite of 3D printers. The production possibilities are staggering. Robots making and programming themselves. Absolutely. Futuristic sci-fi is now. Yeah, the future is now. That's Barry in Cork. Will AI eventually work out all music note combinations and destroy the creation of new songs? John in Cork asks. Possible.
I don't know. I mean, humans are just incredibly creative and I don't think computers are anywhere near as creative right now.
I was just on my mobile phone website yesterday and seemed to be a chatbot that I was dealing with. After an exchange of typed messages, it solved my problem, which turned out to be my mistake. Scary stuff, right out of Terminator movie. Thanks, says Pat. Now, the people who are developing this technology and have developed it are people who are looking to make profit. There was a letter written and some of the signatories were people like Elon Musk and others. And it struck me when I read it, and they were talking about regulation and you're calling for regulation as well around this technology. It struck me that they it was a bit like pulling the ladder up after themselves, that they'd made their money and had their fun. And now they were seeing a new generation of tech entrepreneurs who were going to make a fortune out of AI. And they didn't like the look of it.
One can always have sour grapes about this, but I would say that, you know, we are at a change point right now. There's a phase change going on, and we need to look at what's happening and not make the same mistakes, as you said, that we've made with social media.
Yes. I suppose the problem is that none of us can tell the future, and legislating for something that might happen is difficult.
Yes. I mean, I have an interesting analogy. So if you think about autonomous cars, you know, for a while that was a huge buzz and people were saying that we would have fully autonomous cars and that has fizzled out a bit. Mm. One of the problems is that they found that it is a lot harder than people had thought. And the other issue is that this was entering a very tightly regulated industry. So when a Tesla crashes, people hear about it and, you know, there are insurance ramifications to that. Mm. Now, with ChatGPT, there is no regulatory environment, you know, so these bots don't have to drive on the road. They don't have to follow the rules of the road. They don't have to get insurance. And, you know, as we saw with issues of social media, people were damaged. There is probably greater isolation in the world.
We don't know what the long-term effects of social media are yet.
No, we don't.
No. Yeah.
And you know, these companies don't have to have any sort of...
Duty of care,
yeah. Exactly. You know, so I do think that, you know, the person who was saying, well, you know, ho-hum, this really isn't anything, we don't know. And the danger is very strong. And because these companies are purely profit driven, it's an issue. And as I said in my newspaper article, if you think about the tobacco industry, you know, they denied any damages and it took a lot of effort to repair those damages. And, you know, we still have a lot of smoking in the world today. And, you know, we've seen the damage caused by social media. And, you know, we're at a point where this is being ramped up considerably. And, you know, we need to pay attention.
It's sort of worrying because, and this is a gross generalization, and I apologize in advance for it, but the people who develop this sort of technology are, you know, in the main a type of person, and there's no malice in them at all. They're just high-fiving each other when they break a code or get the computer to do something that it hasn't done beforehand. And they aren't searching through their advances to see if it can be used for malicious intent. But let it out there, and it's out there. And the first thing, like already there's, I saw a headline there, they thought loved one were calling for help. It was an AI scam. So that like this technology has only been available a few months and already the scammers are onto it. And we know that people, like, for example, porn were the first people to use video. Scammers are going to be the first people to use this and make an awful lot of money out of it.
Yeah, but you know, one point I should make is that these companies will tend to hide the bad side effects. So if you right. think about Meta, and they knew about Instagram, and that was proven in court, and you know they hid it. And so I would suspect okay. that these companies may know about bad side effects and they would hide it again. It's just like the tobacco industry.
Yeah.
No different.
Some people are calling for things like, say, the FDA in America or the EMA here, the European Medicines Agency, where when a medicine is introduced, that it has to go through a number of trials before it is licensed. Similarly, they're calling for that in technology. So before a piece of technology, a new advance, is allowed out into the general public, that it would be tested. But that's flawed in itself because we don't know. You know, it's like, you know, about a name, right? Give a child's name to the meanest, funniest, cleverest bully in the schoolyard and see what they can do with it. Similarly with technology, you give it to the brightest, most malicious, most megalomaniacal, whatever, horrible person with power and see what they'll do with it. And there's no way of knowing what they'll do with it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There are clear potentials for unintended consequences, but I do think that understanding and studying these, I mean, that's why drug studies have to be done, right? They need to look through and make sure that you've done due diligence to rule out the consequences that you can find out about. And that hasn't been done here at all.
Do you think politicians know or care enough about this to do anything?
I think they have to. You know, one of my colleagues at UCC, Barry O'Sullivan, he has been promoting a lot of policies. So there has been a lot of work that has been done to think about ways to circumvent these issues. And so, you know, that is out there. And really, I think it's governments needing to take these companies together, and we need to come up with, you know, jointly worked out solutions to this.
Right.
You know, I'm not at all in favor of blocking the advances here, but we have to think about the social good, and you know, we have to enforce liability on these large language models like ChatGPT and the companies who provide them.
Just as a sort of a cautionary note at the very end of all this, Tristan Harris compared the stage we're at now with AI back to the atomic bomb and the Manhattan Project. That's what it was called, wasn't it?
And yes.
And, you know, Oppenheimer, and if he knew what his research was going to lead to, you know, and he's saying now that we should be telling people and we should talk about it, we should ask our politicians about it, we should be legislating for it, we should be voting on it, and that's what they're calling for. So AI Dilemma is up there on YouTube. Gregory Proven's piece is on theirishtimes.ie. Gregory, we'll speak again, I'm sure. Thanks so much for coming into our Cork studio and have a good day.
Thank you very much, Ray. It's been a pleasure.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 ray at rte.ie. It's fascinating, the whole chat GPT and AI. And you'll be hearing more and more chats about that. And you'll be asked, I'd say, in the future, you'll be asked to vote on it. And it will be one of those things that'll come up on the doorstep when politicians are coming around looking for the vote. I guarantee you that. I guarantee you that. Anyway, right now it's time for the Whodunit quiz. Two quizzers standing by and three whodunit questions each for them and a prize. And to celebrate the launch of the River Club Sanctuary Terrace, the River Lee in Cork, is giving us a chance to win a two-night stay for two people with cocktails on the stunning terrace. It's located in the heart of Cork City. The terrace at the River Club has been transformed into a haven of tranquility just in time for the warmer months. There's lovely wisteria and ivy and other scented blossoms there. A gorgeous place to relax overlooking the River Lee. I've been there. It's lovely. Doylecollection.com. Doylecollection.com for more information. Kevin Harty, how are you?
Hiya, Ray. How's it going?
Good. You're in Leperstown in Dublin.
I am indeed. Just back in the office. I was out and about, but I'm just back in now, yeah.
Right. Does artificial intelligence affect you in any way, shape or form?
Not yet. It scares me, I'll be honest with you, but it hasn't fully affected the business yet, no.
Are you on Spotify?
Yes.
Well, it does affect you then, because it's...
Sorry, fair point of view, yeah.
No, like, it's there. It's all present.
It's everywhere.
But it's just, it has advanced in the last year exponentially, and they're talking about doubling exponentially now, that the rate of change is going to be huge. Anyway, watch this space. So you're back in the office. Where were you before the office?
I was just out and about meeting some clients, and I was lucky enough to be in the car when I heard the quiz.
Great.
Thing, so it was great.
Great. And what are you up to? What do you do for a living?
What do I do? I work in finance, and just nothing mad at the moment, just busy enough in work,
right,
and recovering after the weekend and looking forward to the bank holiday weekend coming up.
And I see one of your sons is involved in Dublin GAA.
He is very involved in Gaelic at the moment. It's big into it. So at the moment, taxi servicing is my main job. Myself and my wife in the evening is doing a lot of taxiing around Dublin. But he loves it, so it's great.
Is it a county level?
At the moment, it is a county level, yeah.
Wow.
So he's very lucky, yeah.
Wow.
So very lucky, and it's just keeping him busy and keeping us busy as well.
So how many times a week would he train then?
Four times a week at the moment.
Right.
So it's full on.
Yeah.
Full on as such.
But and would he
he's
be...
in TY, so it keeps him busy.
Aha. Uh-huh. Would he be getting advice now on diet?
Yes, most definitely.
All
diet,
right,
and training and stuff like that in advance of matches, in advance of training, carb loading and obvious stuff, taking lots of liquid on,
yeah,
eating the
yeah,
right foods, that type of stuff, yeah.
But he'd have an email to that effect or an A4 page or whatever.
They would get advice as well, face-to-face at some of the training sessions.
Right.
The nutritionist talk to them and that type of stuff.
Right.
It's very,
wow,
professional.
Well,
very
professional.
Very
professional. No wonder they're having the success that they've had over the last while. Now, you're up against Avril Rath from Belgooley in Cork. How are you doing, Avril?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. Where's Belgooley?
It's 4 miles before Kinsale, a lovely village.
All right. On the way out from Cork?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Is it
just
on the coast?
Before Kinsale.
Is it on the coast?
No, it's not. Well, we're not too far from Oysterhaven.
Right,
but
okay.
But you just have to go, you go straight through to Kinsale.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But so, it's on the main road.
Yeah, like you're sort of minutes away from the sea, really.
That's it, yeah, exactly.
It's a great name, isn't it, Belgooley?
It is, yeah. Up the Goolies.
Is there a GAA team? Is there? There is. Up. Go on the Goolies!
There is, yeah.
Go on the Goolies!
Yeah. My girl's actually Jay Camogie, which... that's our local team.
Right, okay. That's funny. So you're in charge of dinner tonight?
Well, not necessarily. I better not take the credit for that. It's my husband. He's making chicken curries on the menu tonight.
Aha. And what's his recipe? Is it? Does it involve a jar or is it from scratch?
No, from scratch. He's very good at it, but it is his job, so he's a chef, so...
Ah, right. Yeah.
He does it without even thinking about it.
Exactly, if he was using a jar.
But we appreciate it.
Yeah, fair enough.
He wouldn't use a jar.
Yeah, he wouldn't use a jar, fair enough. Aren't you lucky to have a chef as a husband?
I'm very lucky, yeah.
Yeah, and what else does he make? What's his signature dish?
Well, I'm the same as everybody else, I'm afraid. We're just like spaghetti bolognese, and
Yeah, but it's
scratching our heads wanting to know what we do for dinner.
But it's restaurant level, yeah.
It is, yeah.
Okay, now, Kevin versus Avril, it's Dublin versus Cork. Three questions, I'll give you the category, then I ask you if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, you get 2 points for a correct answer. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner, and if the drawn points, we go to a tie break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Kevin, the first category is music. What do you want to do? Do you want to go for a clue or not?
I've got no clue.
No clue. Okay, so for two, who is this singing?
Crackling rose and make me a smile. Girl, if it lasts for an hour, it's all right.
Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond is correct, yes. You don't need to hear the end of it. Crackling rose, Neil Diamond. 2 points for you. Well done. Now, Avril, what do you want to do? Clue or no clue?
No clue.
No clue. So for two, who's singing this?
Oh, you know it sure is hard to leave here, Carrie, but it's really not my home. My fingernails are filthy. I've got beach tar on my feet. And I miss my clean white linen and my fancy French cologne. Oh, Carrie, get out your cage.
Who's that?
Haven't a clue.
No.
Sorry.
No.
No.
The clue would have been you can catch her driving a big yellow taxi. Would that have helped? No. Joni Mitchell. Joni Mitchell we were okay. looking for. Okay. Early days. Don't fret. Back to you, Kevin. It's famous actors. Category number two. Do you want a clue?
No clue.
No clue. Okay. Who is this famous actor for 2 points?
I think part of the reason that it's so difficult for all of us to come to terms with it is that our attention is fractured into pixels of information. And we're so, and that's sort of what the film is about as well, is our inability to prioritize and to make a list. We have the pessimism of the intellect, but we need the optimism of will.
Who's that?
Meryl Streep.
It is Meryl Streep, yes. She was talking about Don't Look Up, that brilliant movie from a couple of years ago where she played the American president. You're on four with that 2 points. Right, Avril, you're under pressure. Dun, 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 dun. So, yeah, well, here's the way. Here, if you go for two and then Kevin falters on his final question and you go for two on your final, it could be a draw. So you're not out of it yet. Okay. You're still there. But you do have to go without a clue on both questions.
We'll go for that.
Okay. So famous actors, we're talking for 2 points. Who is this famous actor?
I love that. You know, I grew up, I always wanted to travel the world. So when I started making movies, I was able to go watch movies in other countries. So I always go watch it, films and with other audiences and watch their movies with them. So I do. Yeah, when they really enjoy it, that's what I want. I make my movies for audiences, for you all. So it's a pleasure to see it. I just want to entertain you.
Who's that? Go on, say a famous actor.
Al Pacino, but I haven't a clue. No. I know that.
It is Tom Cruise.
What?
Yes.
It sounds totally different on the microphone.
That's Tom Cruise. That's Tom Cruise.
If I was listening to the radio now, I would have known that.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
Okay. I know his voice. That's, oh, God. Okay.
Now, listen to it again with knowing that it's him.
I love that. You know, Look, I grew up, I always wanted to travel the world, so when I was...
See, it is, yeah, when you know it's him, because I was looking at his name. Yeah, you can hear him. Okay. That wasn't computer generated, I can assure you. Avril, hard luck. We're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show. Keep cup. And lovely talking to you, and enjoy the chicken curry.
Thank you very
See you,
much,
Avril. Bye now.
Bye.
Well done, Kevin. Congratulations.
Thanks a million, Ray. That's brilliant news. Brilliant news.
Yeah, you're off to the River Lee in Cork, and you can go to doylecollection.com/Cork to see what's in store for you, which includes their lovely The River Club Sanctuary Terrace, which sounds amazing. So enjoy that, and well done, Kevin.
Thanks, super. That's great, Ray.
Good luck.
Thank you.
See you now, Kevin. Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I wonder, will they do a version of Viva Las Vegas? You too are going to Vegas at the end of September and the beginning of October. They've announced dates there and they're going to be performing in the world's most cutting edge venue, Sphere, at the Venetian in Las Vegas. And their creative director, Willie Williams, has been talking about U2's residency in Vegas.
So I get a call from Bono saying, hey, there's this venue being built in Las Vegas. You've got to be kidding. Sphere is completely unprecedented. You won't see speaker stacks hanging from the ceiling because the entire building is a speaker and a video screen inside and out. Every time we go to do something new, it's a whole blank slate. And thinking about Sphere, suddenly everything is circular. I feel like we've cracked the code. I mean, it's complete madness, really. But we'd be mad not to.
There you go, when Bono comes to town, as in Las Vegas. They're coming September, October, and tickets are available this week if you want to go on a trip. Have you ever been to Las Vegas, Connor?
I have. I was in Las Vegas on a work trip about 12 years ago, maybe.
How long did you stay?
3 nights.
That's about it then.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It was plenty.
Yeah. Get me out of here!
No, it was great crack. And I remember I used to play a lot of poker, and the thing I was really looking forward to was playing poker at one of the poker tables. And I'd like we were being constantly pushed away from the gambling because we were brought there by the Las Vegas Tourism Authority, and they were saying, "Oh, there's way more to Vegas than gambling." And do you know what there is? There's loads of stuff to do. I saw the Lion King, and I saw Cirque du Soleil and the Grand Canyon, but I really wanted to play poker, and I was like, my whole 3 days was building up to the poker, and I sat down and I set aside all this cash. I was like, I have 300 quid, and I'm going to spend 300 quid at the poker table. And I was gone in 15 minutes because the clown beside me was absolutely plastered, right? And he was just sitting there and he just kept shoveling his money in. And it's really hard to play poker against somebody who's really drunk,
right?
Because all that they require is a little
I'll take
bit,
your word for it.
Because they're not making bets logically,
yes,
they're just putting the money in. And anyway, so my whole thing was to play at a real Vegas poker table, and I was gone in 15 minutes.
That's a life lesson.
There we go.
Don't play poker against a drunk man.
That's what the woman, that's what the dealer said to me. Said you can't, you can't beat a loose drunk, or something like that was her phrase.
Great piece in today's Irish Times, because we're in a cost of living crisis. People still want to go on holidays and they want to know how to save money. And a camping holiday, which you are vastly experienced.
I am. I've done a lot of them.
Yeah, and that's what you deal with today. And it's not a tent and a rucksack.
No, not at all. No, and nor is it like really cheap. It's just cheaper than the alternatives, and I actually think it's way better value for money. So, you know, and there's a lot, like in the piece today, there's like 16 or 17 tips to get the best out of your camping holiday. But the bottom line is that for a family of two adults and two kids, say, which is always the family that people pick, even though doesn't apply to me at all because I've got three children, but you know, you can probably get 2 weeks in a really good campsite in Europe in a caravan, a mobile home that has like things like dishwasher and like microwave and telly if you want it, for like around, it depends on when you go, but for anything from 700 or 800 euros for 2 weeks, up to like $2,000 for 2 weeks.
It's probably an option that a lot of people haven't considered.
Well, I mean, a lot of people, like, I think one of the things about camping is once you do it once or twice and you have a good time, you'll do it forever with your family because it's just the perfect family holiday for lots of different reasons. A, you get to live the outdoor life. So when you stay in self-catering accommodation, you're kind of forced to eat in restaurants of an evening, or else you have to cook in the apartment. Sure, there's no joy in that really. Or if you're staying in a hotel, you have to work around hotel hours. So you have to get up, you know, you have to be out by 10 o'clock to have the breakfast, and then you might have the dinner in the hotel or whatever it might be. Whereas when you're camping, it's just so relaxed. And you go to a campsite where there's a barbecue.
But it's a mobile home.
It's a mobile home. Yeah. But so it has, like I say, it has air conditioning, yes, all that stuff. Because I've done the camping.
It has a cooker, an oven.
Oh, that 100%. Yeah, yeah. Like I've done the camping in a tent.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like it was a great experience. But like when you're camping in a tent in France, as it happens, like, and it gets hot, like there's no air conditioning in a tent. Yeah. And nor is there plumbing. Or if it's raining and like the mud starts pouring into the tent and you're sleeping.
So you don't have to worry about any of that.
But whereas when you're doing it in the mobile home, and as I say, there's lots of different campsites around the south of France, the north of Spain, and then more recently we went to Portugal to a campsite in Portugal, and I've never had a bad experience camping. It's always a way to save money, and your kids live the outdoor life for the 2 weeks,
and that's the key thing, isn't it? The social aspect for 100%.
And this is the one, and I actually feel uncomfortable saying it, but one of the things I always say to people is if you book with an Irish campsite operator, so there's Kellair and Banlasloe or Eurocamper based in Cork, or there's a few others, and when you book with them, they all book their mobile homes on the same, you know, in the same areas.
Okay, yeah.
So you end up, if you book with one of those people, you end up with lots surrounded by other Irish families, which is both a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because it's a good thing because it means all of the kids get to play outside together, and there isn't that language barrier.
It's safe.
And the kids get to experience that thing that I took for granted growing up, and I suspect you probably did too. You'd like, after your dinner, after your lunch, you'd call into your friends' houses. Now, kids nowadays don't really do that anymore because we're all helicopter parents and we're always going, "Where are you now? Yeah. I just walked to the door with you." So the kids can go out and call for their friends, and they can play on the little streets in front of the caravans with their friends.
Yeah.
And because the traffic is always really restricted, they're not going to get hit by cars, and they're not going to, you know. So there's so many different advantages to it. But the key thing is that everybody on a camping holiday spends the vast, vast, vast majority of their day outside.
Yeah.
And that's the essence of a good holiday.
And of course, you're in the main guaranteed the weather. Now, this came out to PriceWatch at RTE.ie. Hi, Connor. I'm horrified with what has just happened to me. I left the dress into my local dry cleaners. It wasn't wildly expensive, but I loved it. When I collected it, the dye from the bottom half had faded, and instead of being red, it was pink. The dry cleaner said it was a problem with the dress and nothing to do with them. But are they able to wash their hands of it just like that? Surely they have to accept responsibility. Please help.
Yeah, they do have to accept responsibility. And there's very clearly set out rules in place for things like this. So the first thing that I would say is that they have to show due care. And a dry cleaner has to show due care and diligence when it comes to looking after your product, your clothes. So if they don't, and if a product says dry clean only and you bring it to a dry cleaner, it's their responsibility to make sure that that product is looked after properly. So that might be a case that they have to do it, you know, a spot test on the product to make sure that it's not going to run or whatever it might be. Now, if it says dry clean only and they use the correct dry cleaning methods, well, then it shouldn't run. But it's there. They are obliged under law to look after your product. So clearly that hasn't happened in this instance. Now, it becomes kind of tricky to prove where the fault lies, because the dry cleaner can say, oh, well, there's a fault with the product. Or, you know, and they can try and say, well, it's nothing to do with us. So then you have to say, OK, well, how do you handle this? Now, you have rights. They're never going to put the product back to the way it was. So that's an issue. So I think what this person has to do is first they need to decide what outcome they want. Do they want the dress to be repaired or re-dyed or whatever it is that can happen to it? Do they want to get a replacement? Or do they want to get cash back? Or do they want to get some kind of, for want of a better phrase, benefit guide? So do they want to get, you know, vouchers for the dry cleaners or whatever it might
probably
be?
Probably not.
But you say, okay, what is it? What is the outcome I desire most? And then you go in and you say, how am I going to best get that outcome? Now, rather than running into the dry cleaner straight away and shouting the house down, it's important that you approach it in a kind of a calm and measured fashion. So you go in and say, listen, this has happened under Irish consumer law. I have rights and you have an obligation to look after me. And you say it all in a very, very measured way. So you're not having a fight, because once you start having a fight...
Sometimes it's good to print it off on the internet, have it in front of you there and read from it.
And, you know, the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, CCPC.ie, that website has lots of information on how to deal with specific incidents. So you go in and say, OK, this is where we are. This is where we need to get. How do we best get there? Now, it's important to remember that you're not going to be able to get, let's say if the dress costs 200 quid, I don't know how much it costs, but let's say if it costs 200 quid, you are not legally entitled to 200 euros back, because there's a kind of a pro rata thing that kicks in here. So let's say if the dress is a year old.
Uh-huh. Well, then depreciation.
It does depreciate. Yes. Now, it becomes very kind of vague and hard to quantify. Like, how much does a dress depreciate by over a period of time? So you could say, OK, well, listen, I'm not going to get the 200 quid back, but I might get 100 quid back, or I might get 70 quid back. And then you have the negotiation with the person. But in the first instance, I would say you have to establish, A, what went wrong. B, did they exercise necessary due care and attention to the product? If they were in some way failing, how are they going to put it right? So it might be that the product could be redyed. So let's say if it's a red dress, you can have it redyed and everything is as good as new. Or else you might say, OK, well, I want to get 70 quid back. And if your negotiations and if your conversation, and I stress that it should be a conversation rather than a row with the dry cleaner, ends up going nowhere, there's no point at that point in you shouting the place down, because you know you're just going to cause
claims court.
And again, I know that sometimes I can hear your heart sink when I suggest that. And the difficulty with a small claims court in an instance like this is it costs 25 quid, right? Yeah. Like, it probably would be an open and shut case for you, the claimant, if you were to lodge a claim against Joe Bloggs, the dry cleaners, over a 200 euro dress. But you're paying 25 euros. To lodge the claim, then you present your case to...
Have you ever been there? Is it open? Is there what?
No. For instance, in Dublin, it happens in the forecourts,
right?
And it happens on a set day once a month, and it's basically like a regular courtroom, although it doesn't feel like a regular courtroom because there are no solicitors, or you know, it doesn't. It's not a
so.
A
so this really person would arrive with their dress, would they?
Well, what they would probably no. They, what they well, this is the other thing that you need to prepare yourself for that. So you'd have to take photographs the dress. Now that's just taking the photographs on your phone.
Okay, yeah.
You bring the photographs, you show them to the
Exhibit A,
the judge, and the judge looks at them and says, okay, well, that dress is clearly run. If the dry cleaner would either be in court And they'd go, well, listen, Your Honour, I did everything I could. Or they wouldn't be. And in which case, if they're not there, well, then you are automatically...
I'm fine. So, yeah, I won't be doing it.
But like for something whereby you might get €70 back, the question then is it worth your time and is it worth the hassle? And you would probably say to yourself, no, it's not. But for some people, it's the principle of the thing that matters.
Yeah.
And for some people, it's the actual, if you were to, and I'm not saying threaten, but if you were to say to the dry cleaners, this is what we're going to do next, that might nudge them along the road to doing the right thing.
And is it sort of, does the judge make up his mind there?
It tends to be a very, very fast process.
Open and shut case.
100%.
I'm doing all the cliches here.
Yeah, no. because for this instance, you think, okay, well, maybe not. It's not such a great idea because it'll be so much hassle. But for a lot of things, it does work really well. Now, the difficulty is, The courts can make a ruling against the dry cleaners in this instance.
Yeah.
And they can say, I ordered the dry cleaners to pay you, Ray Darcy, €100 to cover the cost of that dress. But then it's how do you extract the €100 from the dry cleaners? Because the dry cleaner can technically, and it has happened, they just ignore the order of the small claims court, and in which case then you'd have to involve the county sheriff, and then it just becomes so much more problematic. So I, in the first instance, go into the dry cleaners, talk to them in a reasonable way, point out that they've made a mistake, that they need to put it right. You're not looking for the earth, and you're not looking for a brand new dress.
Play them a recording of this and say, neither of us want to end up in the small claims court. So will you just sort me out here?
Because it's just too much hassle. for something where the monetary value is very low, there's just, everyone can come to some kind of compromise.
Well, I hope something works out for you there. Connor, thanks so much. Pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Connor's help with any consumer issues. And we'll talk to Connor next Tuesday, probably next Monday is a bank holiday.
Mayday.
Yeah.
Mayday.
Sarah and Cormac on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.